Welcome to this episode of SDI Encounters, a podcast from SDI, the home of spiritual companionship. I'm Matt Whitney. On this podcast, we share stories and conversations around spiritual care, companionship, and contemplative practice across a diverse range of traditions and experiences. Spiritual companions support others on their spiritual journeys through life. Spiritual companions are welcoming and present with those they companion, listening and responding without judgment. And spiritual companions are contemplative and honor silence as a spiritual practice. You can learn more about our work at our website, sdiworld.org. Thank you for listening. Dr. Diane Millis is an inspirational speaker, teacher, writer, and spiritual director. She's one of the most deeply respected and most popular workshop presenters at SDI's annual conferences. SDI Press has published her book titled Recreating a Life, Learning How to Tell Our Most Life-Giving Story, which you can purchase at sdiworld.org and click on store. Diane's book is also now available as a Kindle ebook, which you can find on amazon.com. In these next two episodes of the podcast, we share a really beautiful and intimate conversation that we recently recorded between Diane and Reverend Sefu Anil Singh Malaris around the writing of Diane's book and how she brought her own stories and experiences into this important work on storytelling. This conversation was the basis for the article that appears in the September 2019 issue of Presence, our quarterly journal on spiritual companionship, which is mailed out to members of SDI.
Okay. What I wanted to do is start with you telling us a little bit about yourself, particularly as it relates to this book, Recreating Your Life. And, before I ask you why you named it that, that title, can you tell us a little bit about you and your own journey and your own evolution as it relates to narrative storytelling, to the theme of this book, and to spiritual direction as well?
Sure. We'll start with a real small question.
Just from small to large.
Well, as you tee this up, my memory takes me back to when I started teaching. And you know that my vocation, my passion in my life has been this call to teaching. And so I hadn't imagined that I'd end up in college teaching. I actually thought I'd probably be a fifth grade teacher, like one of the heroes in my book I talk about. Yeah. And so there's a whole other story of how I arrived in college teaching. But I arrived in college teaching, and I was majoring in the area of communication studies. And there was just something intuitive in me that I always wanted to pay attention to my experience. And, I happen to be a reflective kind of gal. And so I knew there were many other more profitable things to major in college. But majoring in communication helped me to pay attention to my lived experience. And I was then, and I continue to reflect upon this disruptive event of seeing two of the people I love most in the world who, their relationship ended. And as a person who values harmony, as a person who values intimacy and communion, and the things we teach about in my Christian tradition of forgiveness and reconciliation, there was just a whole lot to make meaning of here. Betrayal, disappointment, rejection, you name it. So by studying communication, interpersonal in particular, and eventually teaching it, it gave me a way to both get a degree and do my own personal therapy, if you will. So I'm studying interpersonal communication, and I have the opportunity to begin teaching classes to these 18 to 22 year olds, which was a sheer joy for me. And I remember Seifu inviting them to keep a journal throughout the semester and to pay attention to, you and I would name it, what was stirring within them. I didn't have that language at that time, but I just wanted them to journal about how the what was happening for them in the class. And I noticed that the majority of the journal entries were about these students' family experiences, their family life experiences. And that intrigued me. And I thought, well, you know what? I want my teaching to change the world. And I still do. So I decided I better go on for a PhD and focus on family communication, because all my students are writing about these family experiences. So I need to better understand this more, study this further in order to help them and others. So I share that story to illustrate not only part of my career biography, if you will, story of my calling, but also this predilection to follow the trail of what's meaningful for me and what's meaningful in the lives of the people I encounter. And that's the way my teaching career has unfolded. So you might say at that point, that was an early stage of narrative work. I wouldn't have had that way of naming it. I just wanted to learn alongside. I wanted to pay attention to what my students found valuable, the questions they were holding. And you might say I was teaching as a spiritual direction, as a spiritual director. I was already, if you will, holding these sensibilities and practicing them pedagogically.
Thank you. That's so many. That's a very pregnant statement in so many ways. I'm really intrigued, and I was when I read your book, by the layers. You know, there's multiple layers of discernment, of revelation with a little r, not big r.
Yes.
And incarnations of Diane as a young woman, as a child, as an adult struggling with issues of identity. And so I wonder if you'd be willing, before we move on to a more conceptual discussion, kind of rooted in your own personal experience, how the power of narrative storytelling, you know, how you came to, you talk about this in your book very eloquently, but if you could share for those who haven't read your book, you know, how the various layers of Diane kind of revealed themselves to you as you went along, right? How and what tools you found helpful in doing that discernment and assessment, not only of who you were, of coming to awareness of who you were, but of who you wanted to be.
Sure. You know, so one of my taglines in the book, and I'm going to stick with this, is a tagline is, it takes a community to tell our most life-giving story. And I've been blessed. I've never been in want of someone to serve as a listener, whether it was a teacher, and there were many teachers who they weren't necessarily designated as my advisor. They just offered that charism so freely and so generously. And I've continued, I hope, to do that in my own teaching work, my own teaching ministry. So there were teachers, there were family members. Yes, I did see professional listeners, you know, for counseling or therapy during my teen and early adult years before I started working with a spiritual director. So I had both professional and non-trained professional people who accompanied me. As I underscore in the book, I think it was those non-trained professionals who were probably the most exquisite listeners. So for me, when you talk about the layers, I had folks who could hold up, not only sit beside me, but hold up a mirror and help me, I guess, see the beauty in myself more fully and be more compassionate with myself. So I want to do a shout out to the role of community. That would be the first dimension. I think there's this beautiful feedback loop between prayerful introspection and conversation. You know, so I write and I teach about both. I, for whatever reason, prayerful introspection comes pretty easily to me. I've always been gifted with that. I had that sense of this sacred presence very early in life. So I've always felt at ease and comfortable in prayerful introspection. And maybe that's the reason I value the community so much, because if I just stay there, I don't think I get to the layers as fully, Seifu. I really need this back and forth. I think we all do. And I think for some of us, maybe the conversation and the time in community comes more easily than the introspection. And I think for others, the introspection may come more easily. You know, we name this what, extroversion, introversion, what, however we make meaning of this. But I think it's, we need both. So the way I've constructed the book is designed to invite people into both. Yeah. It's designed for some personal introspective writing. And if a person just did that, I think they'll gain further insight. I hope they'll gain further understanding and awareness of the beauty of their story. Mm-hmm. However, I think they'll gain far more if they couple that commitment to introspection with time and community. And that's why we've devoted an entire fourth section, and we devote webinars and we devote workshops mm-hmm. to the role of community, because I think it's this both and that's so imperative. And in fact, I think I've learned that my best gift as a teacher is not so much the information I share, but the invitation to bring people together in community. I really think that is the truest sense of my charism as an educator.
Support for this podcast comes from SDI's upcoming one-night event with Mirabai Starr and Anne Holmes Redding called A Fierce and Tender Wisdom, Reclaiming the Feminine Across Spiritual Traditions, happening November 12th, 2019 at Meydenbauer Center in Bellevue, Washington. In this extraordinary SDI event, we will gather and explore and model cooperative feminine leadership for these turbulent times. Join us for an interactive sacred celebration that reclaims and centers women's voices in spiritual spaces. Together, we will step up to the call for prophetic feminine wisdom and take refuge in the sanctuary of community. Learn more at sdiworld.org. And now here's part two of our conversation.
So I have two questions that arise. I mean, one observation and a question. I think the beauty of this, the tools that you present in your book and in your seminars and your workshops, and you know, I think that they permeate who you are. And so that's going to be one of the questions, is who are you really? But we'll save that easy question for later.
Yes.
Part of the beauty is that every day is a new day, right? Every day is a new story. Every day is a new manifestation of our identity, however we define that identity, because it's framed very much by our interactions with others.
Yes.
Right? It's an alchemical process almost. And so your observations as being fortunate enough to be fed by a community of teachers and mentors and others who have helped inform your sense of yourself and can help all of us inform our sense of ourselves. It is a wonderfully rich observation, particularly as it relates to introspection, you know, introversion, extroversion, introspection, contemplation, and reflection. So how much of this identity that we construct is a response to the world, meaning we are social creatures, so our identities are very much, hopefully, ideally, both a presentation of ourselves to the world.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And also, as you really indicate in your book, a presentation of ourselves to ourselves.
Right? Yeah.
It's both how we look to the world and how we look to ourselves. And ideally, I think what you're suggesting is that when there's harmony between the two is when we're in the best place.
Yeah.
So speak a little bit about that process of coming into harmony between our sense of who we are to ourselves in those quiet places that you encourage us to gather in, and our presentation of ourselves to the world.
That question really lands, and I notice the energy emanating from that question for me. What I talk about in the book through the stories I share, and it may seem tacit, but it really was the underlying struggle for me, and it's been the ongoing struggle for me, is I wish that I had lived in a world and in a family, I think maybe we all do, where I could have spent more time presenting myself to myself, reflecting on myself to myself.
Mm-hmm.
I was raised in a family, and I don't want to suggest that I'm the only one, but there was so much emphasis put on appearances, mm-hmm. and the way things looked. And so as the oldest child and as the oldest grandchild in one of the families, I think there were a lot of expectations for, you know, how I looked and the appearance of what I did.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not suggesting I'm the only, I think this is a theme for so many, but this was my experience. And it grated for me, because for me, where the action was is what was going on within me. And so I was drawn to places and people who could help tend to what was going on within me. So for me, it was a godsend to go to a Catholic school, because I had these Benedictine nuns who, not every one of them, but many of them, were very concerned about this inner life kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I had a cousin who's a Trappist monk, and I could get into conversations about these inner life kinds of things. So I love to spend a lot of time reading. You know, this inner life was so real to me. And I often wonder if that inner life had been as real to our society or to my family, and they could have tended that more explicitly, how would I now be? You know, so this is a theme in my book. It's this phantom kind of story. I'm comparing, you know, who I turned out to be with this sense of who might I have been. And here again, I think this is another tension we all hold, especially when we get to the ages we are, Seifu, right? We're more aware of. I happen to know, I think we share the same decade age-wise.
Yes.
Say that. But I think we're more aware of, you know, maybe this sense of where we thought our life might go and where our life has gone. And so in the book, I named that the phantom story. And so I'm holding that phantom story on a couple of levels. I'm holding that phantom story to say, you know, I had this rich inner life at a very young age, and I think that was a divine gift I was given. And what if life had been set up in such a way that that could have been a more official curriculum? Mm-hmm. So what I now do as a teacher, what I now do as a parent, what I now do as a friend is I try to create that curriculum for others. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm trying to offer what I had hoped I would have received more of. Now, as I say, I'm very grateful for the community, the people that did accompany me. But I just see this, the deep hunger I had and still have. Mm-hmm. And now I look at the backdrop of the social media stuff, and people are seeking this authentic connections, and yet is it perpetuating further? I mean, these are concerns I hold now in 2019. Sure. But for me, I'm very, very interested in this presentation of ourselves to ourselves and how we create occasions for people to reflect on that and to speak about that. I'm far less interested in the presentation to the outside world, and why. I have a resistance to that because I felt too much emphasis was placed on that, and I found it a huge waste of time. So now I'm speaking out of my rawness. I'm not saying that we shouldn't be concerned about the presentation, but I think the emphasis has to be, you know, Howard Thurman names it, there's a sound of the genuine within each of us. And I think the more we can create occasions, the more we can give permission, the more we can offer invitations for people to pay attention to that sound of the genuine. I just think that presentation to our world flows naturally as a result.
Yeah. Thank you. That's all of that is beautifully said. I wrote a piece for Listen. I don't know if you've seen it, called Remember Yourself. I wrote it. It came out last week. You can take I can send it to you. It's 500-600 words. And then I did a podcast on the notion of remembering yourself. And I'll digress for a minute because I think it goes to what you just said and to really core discussion of who we are and who you are. So in this article, I was raised Catholic, and it was Brussels in Belgium, and it was a Jesuit school, and we were located right next to the Basilica of Brussels, which is the fifth largest church in the world, a huge cavernous place. And so I remember going in there, you know, age six, and we'd go in there to pray 2 or 3 times a day. And it was, you know, huge stained glass windows. And, you know, you're a Roman Catholic, the incense burning and the Gregorian chants in the nave and massive organs and, you know, all of this just majesty, the majesty of God, which I felt deeply at a very early age. I actually wrote my admission essay to Divinity School, to Harvard Divinity School, about this experience. And the reason why I mention it is that for me, and I'm thinking for you as well, the journey of personal transformation is really kind of remembering who we really are. Yes. And who our essence is.
Yes.
What our essence is. And actually our essence is God. And I'll use that terminology here because I think we both share it. And so remembering our essence and remembering ourselves, it's not really so much a journey of discovery, although it can certainly be framed that way. It's just, hey, wake up. Who have you been all along? And that arc that I think you were just mentioning about longing, or wondering and longing what might have been, is really kind of remembering who your authentic essence. So I wonder if you can comment a little bit about that and about the search for our authentic selves.
Yeah. Well, I thank you for the gift of that language that you just offered. And I think of the etymology of remembering. So to remember those parts of ourselves. And the search for the authentic, you know, when I sent you this book proposal last summer, the initial proposal was a bit different than the book I sent you in December. When I proposed the book, I had not intended to have all but two of the chapters be focused on my own story. I had intended to weave in a number of narratives to illustrate this process of remembering, this process of getting close, mining the meaning, going through these layers to the core, story of who we've been, who we are, who we aspire to be. But what ended up happening is when you show up and you're prayerfully reflecting and writing, I had these wonderful exploratory prompts I wanted to share, and I had shared through the past years of teaching, and I just felt drawn to reflect on them myself. And I was really, really concerned that although I've never felt drawn to write a personal memoir, I was very, very concerned this was going to seem wildly self-indulgent. I'm not a famous person. I'm not a well-known person. And I thought, will this be of value to anybody but the people who know me and may find this interesting? You know, like my mother, for instance, who really enjoyed the book, by the way. It has prompted her to reflect more deeply on her own story and on our story. So that aside, I wanted to take that risk because I thought, my story can serve as a portal. Any one of our stories can serve as a portal if they are told as honestly and transparently as possible. So I took that risk, and in so doing, I gained greater freedom. I was recreated. I mean, you and I both know we didn't land on the title of the book toward the very end. And we landed on the title in large part because it probably was the most apt verb for describing what had happened to me, and my hope for others is that through this intensive personal exploration and bringing it into conversation with one or more, you know, committed listeners, we can experience this ongoing recreation. So the authenticity, to me, authenticity is always a risk. And for me, it was a risk to put myself out there. And I shared some stories that I've never shared before. I usually try to make it a practice to not, you know, I don't write about my husband because he doesn't need to be implicated in my teaching, you know. I write about my son because my son's a writer and he gives me permission. You know, I told a story about my father, which is a very tender story, you know, but I thought I need to tell some of these stories about the most tender places in the hopes that in me doing so authentically, people will identify with it and be willing to take the risk themselves. So authenticity to me is always navigating this dialectic between risk and trust. And I had great trust in you. I had great trust in the members of our SDI community that it was a risk worth taking.
Again, Diane's book is now available as a Kindle ebook, which you can find on Amazon.com, or you can purchase the paperback from our own website, sdiworld.org, and simply click on the link for store. You can catch part two of this conversation in next week's episode. This is Matt Whitney with Spiritual Directors International. Thanks again for listening. Your time and your presence here are deeply appreciated. If you liked this show and would like us to continue making them, please do subscribe now while it's fresh on your mind. Also, we would love to hear from you, so please feel free to send in your comments and suggestions to the email address podcast@sdiworld.org. To learn more about spiritual companionship and ways that you can plug in and join our community, visit us at our website at www.sdiworld.org. Thank you. Blessings and peace on your day, and may you share blessings and peace to others.